Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, April 30th, 2012. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. Today's show is being brought to you by abookin90days.com, a customized coaching program for heart-based coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers who want to write a book to attract more clients and increase profits. You can get your copy of the 7-Step Roadmap to Publishing Success at www.abookin90days.com. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Dreamer in the Fields, From Child Migrant Worker to Champion, with my guest, author John Hill. But first, I'd like to welcome all of you, my listeners. Now, whether you're listening live on the phone, some of you are on the website, some of you are in the chat room, and many of you listen to the show after the fact from the archives. No matter how you access the show, I want to welcome you, and I'm honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. Now, if you enjoy the show, don't keep it a secret. Tell other people about it who can benefit. Thanks to modern technology, it's very easy to do that, because on my show page at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, right under my photo, you will see several ways to keep up with the show. One of the easiest ways is to click the follow button, and you will get an announcement and a reminder in your email each week of the shows. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about many ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. To get at that goal, each week I interview guests from many different fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change and adversity, parenting, wealth creation, business success. We cover it all because it all contributes to lasting happiness. Today's episode is Dreamer in the Fields, From Child Laborer to Champion, with my guest, John Hill, who is proclaimed by many as an equal opportunity champion. He began his career as an affirmative action manager for FMC Corporation. After various positions in human resources, John became director of the Equal Opportunity Division for Santa Clara County in California in 1990. When he became director of the Office of Affirmative Action Compliance for Los Angeles County in 1994, he raised targets for the hiring of businesses owned by minorities and other groups identified as historically disadvantaged. He served for 10 years as chief of staff for Los Angeles County Supervisor Yvonne Braithwaite Burke of the 2nd Supervisorial District. And in his Dreamer in the Fields book, John decided to chronicle his life of hardship as a child worker, complicated by his parents' struggles with drinking, the philandering, and the fighting. And one of his biggest dreams was to be able to go to school. And he eventually did just that. He graduated with a B.S. in Business Administration from the University of San Francisco and a Master's degree in Business Administration from the University of Phoenix. John is the father of 4 daughters and the grandfather of 7. Now he's retired. His wife, Maddie, and he can enjoy their time together in La Quinta, California. But he made time, a little bit of time, to be on the show today. So it's my pleasure to welcome John Hill. Hi, John.
Hi. How are you?
I am great. Thanks for making time to join us.
Thank you.
I know with retirement, people sometimes think you're sitting around and not doing anything, but I'm sure that's not true for you, just like it's not true for me.
No, it's not true for me. I'm trying to get out and still work with young people as much as I can.
Sure, sure. Well, I know that a lot of people are interested in your story because when I posted it, I got a number of comments back. So let's jump right into it. Now, I know that people that are familiar with your contribution to equal employment opportunity probably were very shocked to hear your life story because they knew you as the champion that you are, but they didn't know your history. So what prompted you to tell your story after all those years?
Well, a large number of kids, I could see black and Latino children, seemed to have no inner drive. Mm-hmm. They seemed to be caught up in, I live in this environment, or I live in this area, or my daddy is this, or my mama is this. But they seemed to have none of the inner drive that how do I, myself, get myself up and get going, and how do I rise above this environment that I'm living in. Mm-hmm. And I wrote my book on a point to show them how I did it, that I lived in such poverty that living in the projects would be like living in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. So I try to tell kids that, you know, with eight brothers and sisters, you can still rise above. Mm-hmm. All of the circumstances are around you by having faith in yourself and mm-hmm. understanding what you want to do with your life, not what others want to do with your life.
Mm-hmm. So that inner, having that inner vision and keeping your eye focused on your own dream for yourself is what got you through this, sounds like.
Yes, that's exactly what it is that I started focusing on my own life when I was about 10 or 11 years old, that mm-hmm. I've got to make some choices here, and mm-hmm. I've got to make some choices for myself because I don't have parents that seem to be focused on my future. They were consumed with their own, the mm-hmm. drinking and the fighting and all of this other stuff, but no one seemed to be focused on, I got some kids here, and maybe I need to focus on their education mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. where they're going and how they're going to get there. I didn't see anyone that was going to be helping me to do that, so I did it myself.
That's beautiful. That's so wonderful that at your young age, you saw that you had that some little nugget of hope inside you in spite of the outside surroundings that told you that you needed to focus, or somebody needed to focus on this, and since nobody else was, you stepped up and decided to do it for yourself. Could you give us a little taste of what it was like? I know you could go on with this for a long time, but could you take a few minutes? What was it like growing up as a migrant child worker?
Well, just think of as a kid of five or six years old, getting up at 4 o'clock every morning. Mm-hmm. And arriving at one of the fields to work at about 5:30, and you would work there till about 7:30 at night. And let's say that you were picking cotton. Well, cotton was at that time $3 a 100 pounds, mm-hmm. and my quota when I was 6 years old was 100 pounds of cotton a day, which mm-hmm. was $3. I usually never got to the 100 pounds. I got in the 90s. Every mm-hmm. now and then I would get to the 100, but just think about a little six-year-old kid carrying a sack of cotton up a trailer and emptying it out, and then carrying it, and then coming down that trailer and going back out into the field and working all day in the hot sun and with no breaks except for maybe at lunchtime you'd take a break, but other than that there were no breaks. You just worked, and I knew when I got older that there were child labor laws, but they didn't seem to bother us when we were out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's the issue of getting up at 4 o'clock, working all day, traveling, and then going to the next field the next day. You may finish that field, and you may be in, let's say, a town of Huron, and the next day you may be traveling to a town called San Joaquin. Mm-hmm. And that's where you would work, and then the next day you would travel to another town, mm-hmm. and then the next day you would travel to another town.
Wow.
And during school time, that means that you went to different schools,
mm-hmm.
and you weren't going to stay in one school.
When did you have time to go to school? I'm trying to figure out where in there would you have time to go to school?
Well, sometimes you had time to go to school around October or November mm-hmm. because it was so cold. And rainy and stuff. So kids went to school around October and November, but they stopped going to school around April.
So you were happy to see cold weather come.
Yeah, you were definitely happy when it started to rain, and you say, okay, so Daddy would put us in school then. And so most of the migrant kids didn't arrive at, you know, most kids go to school starting in September. Well, migrant children didn't arrive to school until around October.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually left school around March and April because either you're going to travel to where you think the work is or work is going to be happening in the area close to your home.
Hmm. So, that
so
means
you didn't
you
go
never
to school
really,
a whole year.
Right, and you didn't really get a chance to get settled into school and get to do activities and make friends because I imagine that part of the problem was stability, instability at home. And, of course, we know, as you and I both are parents, we know that school costs money to send children to school. Even, I mean, obviously public school, we think of it as free, but there's costs involved with clothes and activities and so forth. So that means that as a migrant child, you really probably weren't able to take advantage of some of those things.
Well, we didn't have new clothes. I didn't know what new clothes were. You know, every now and then people would come out to the migrant camps and they would leave clothes and stuff like that for the migrant kids, but and books and things of that sort. But you know, sometimes I wore the same thing to school every day for 2 or 3 months.
Wow. Now, what was that like in terms of? I can remember how cruel children are at making fun of each other. Did that cause problems with your classmates?
It caused a lot of problems. I became so shy that I would not talk in class and I would not speak up in class. I thought I smelled, so I didn't want to be around the other kids. I had holes in my shoes, and we put cardboard in the bottom, so I did not want to go out and play because to go out and play, the kids would see I had no soles in my shoes, and of course they would start to laugh. And I was dirty, so I didn't want to hold hands with the kids, you know, to play ring around the rosies or whatever. So I would just beg the teacher to allow me to stay in the classroom, and I would just read. Sometimes she would, and other times she would not.
So we can all relate to how painful that is for a child, because our friends and what they say and those things are very important in those stages to us as children. And here you were, you didn't have that opportunity to partake, and it wasn't your fault, and you didn't have much physical power to do anything about it. You talk about battling suicide at a young age. What do you think was the force that kept you alive, that kept you from doing that?
Well, I was battling this feeling of alone. I felt no one cared about me, and no one was listening to me, and no one, even if I said if I end up missing, I don't think they would miss. They would even know I was even gone.
Wow.
So it was like this, you know. And so I felt that that there were people told me that there was a God, and I felt that he's not listening to me, and why is he punishing me? I'm just a kid.
Right.
So my whole point was that maybe I if I killed myself, I would have I could have a conversation with him on why I was treated like this. I'm thinking as a kid, you know. So people out there need to understand I'm not thinking as an adult or a grown person. I'm thinking as a little 8-year-old kid who's saying, I can't handle this, and I want to know why do other people get to live these nice lives? I pass these nice homes, and I see people in nice cars, and I see kids, some kids at school with brand new clothes, and I see kids living with their parents. Why are these things not happening for me? Why was I picked out to be treated like this? And I didn't understand it.
Now, where did you fit in with, you had 8 brothers and sisters, so where did you fit in the lineup, and how did your siblings respond to all of these same things that were impacting you?
Well, number one, I was the middle child. I was 4 kids older, and it was 4 kids younger.
Okay.
And so the younger ones I felt I didn't want to hang out with, and then the older ones, because I had repeated a grade, felt I should hang out with the younger kids, so I spent a lot of time all by myself, and I didn't talk a lot about what was going on inside of me because I didn't think any of my brothers and sisters would understand. I needed an adult to sit down and talk to who would listen and could give me some guidance. I didn't like talking to kids because I didn't think kids knew any more than I already knew. So There was no need to sit down and talk with them.
Now, were your older brothers and sisters as pained by what was going on as you were, or did they just kind of acclimate?
I think they were as pained, but they seemed to accept it, mm-hmm. and I never accepted it, that mm-hmm. this is a life that I had to live. I didn't think this was a life I had to live, and I needed mm-hmm. to figure out, okay, what am I going to do? And I noticed around me as I grew to the age of 10 that people who lived on these migrant labor camps were uneducated. None of them mm-hmm. had graduated even from eighth grade mm-hmm. or less long go to high school. So I said, well, wait a minute. Maybe education is the key that would get me out of here. So wow. I decided that my one goal in life was to graduate from high school. That's all. Mm-hmm. I didn't mm-hmm. think about going to college or anything like that because I didn't even hardly know about college. Mm-hmm. But I said that I'm going to graduate from high school. At least that's going to give me an education where I can probably work at a gas station, you know. I can probably work at a store. Mm-hmm. So that my whole point was not to work in the fields, and maybe a high school education mm-hmm. would get me to a point where I could have a job that I felt was respectable, driving a truck or something like that. That's what was my thinking.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you must have heard this before, and you know this already, that you were an amazing person from the beginning because you were able to, even when you weren't even sure what your dream was and where it was headed, you did have a dream and you did have this inner something inside you pulling you forward, and then you were observant. You noticed what was going on around you beyond the field, and that
right.
sounds like what was that driving force. You knew there was something better and that you didn't deserve what you were in, and that's what is the miracle that pulled you out of that. So you're to be commended
and that's
for
what
that.
I think, you know, when I talk to kids, I'm trying to get them to realize that observe what's around you.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that my parents were alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that my grandmother was alcoholic. I knew mm-hmm. that my grandfather was. I knew that my uncle was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided that, wait a minute, I'm not going that way. That mm-hmm. I mean, because I could see what alcohol did to people. So
mm-hmm.
I told myself I will never become an alcoholic because I can see.
Mm-hmm.
I see. You know, my
wow.
father was a strong man. A very strong man, very wielded man, worked hard all of his life, but he was consumed by alcohol. He couldn't
mm-hmm.
he could not get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw, and I'm looking around looking at these people, and they're drug addicts, they're alcoholics, they're uneducated, and so I tell kids, look in your community and you will see what happens to people who have no desire to be something great. They
mm-hmm.
have given up. They have
mm-hmm.
given up on life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that you can go out and do exactly what they're doing and it's not going to happen to you,
mm-hmm.
think again. It will
mm-hmm.
happen to you. You have to,
oh.
you know, instead of going down, going left, go right.
Do the opposite of what they're doing, huh?
You got to go the opposite of what they were doing, and that's what I decided to do. And so when I was 8 years old, I told my dad I wanted to go to school. And he
mm-hmm.
said, no, we have to work. I said, I
mm-hmm.
want to go to school. Because I knew that education, I'm not gonna get it out of here unless I get some type of education. So
right, right. That's beautiful. Now, your life turned around when you actually went into the foster care system. Tell us about that and what that meant for you.
Well, when I was 10 years old, I had been praying that my life would be better. I've been praying for something to. I just wanted stability in
mm-hmm.
my life. I wanted
mm-hmm.
to be in a stable environment where I could learn and where I could grow and where I can make decisions for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me a stable home, a stable environment.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 10 years old, my mother had left when I was 8, which
mm-hmm.
was a major shock.
Mm-hmm.
And then my father got into some type of trouble and was put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next thing we know, the county of Fresno came out to where we were in this migrant labor camp and took all of us into Fresno
mm-hmm.
and placed us in foster care.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment I arrived in foster care, the moment I started to see that, wait a minute, you know, all these told me I have to do here is go to school. Mm-hmm. I had three meals a day. I had a room. That was my first time seeing indoor bathrooms, indoor showers, indoor bathtubs, televisions, so I was like, wow, this is okay. And I've got to figure out how to stay here. That was my whole game was to figure out
how do I stay here?
I got to because here I think I can make it, because it seems that my foster mother pushed education, which was great for me. She just that's all she talked about was education.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was reading books after books after books. She had the Encyclopedia Britannica, and I read all of that. She had the Book of Knowledge, and I read that. And she had all of these books in the Bible, and I read all of that stuff. So I was just and I told myself, I'm going to make it. If I can stay here, I'll make it.
Wow.
That was my whole point. If I can stay here, I'll make it.
That's beautiful.
If I can stay here and get through high school, I think I got a shot. And, and basically, I told myself I'm not leaving here, no matter what. I would not leave here.
Wow! And so, were you able to stay with them throughout the high school?
My foster parents took all eight of us kids. My older brother was
went into the military,
okay. And they raised all eight of us.
Oh my goodness!
They kept us together.
Beautiful.
They would not allow us to be split up.
Wow!
And they kept the family intact. All of us graduated high school, except for maybe one.
Mm-hmm.
One or two,
mm-hmm.
I think one.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us, and I went into the military after high school so that I could get the GI Bill so that I could go to college.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that couple that took you in, they are to be commended.
Oh, yeah.
For agreeing to keep you together, because so many times in this system, children get split up.
Absolutely.
And even though they may be able to know where their siblings are, they don't always. But in your case, you've got to stay together. That was just amazing. That is so beautiful. I'm so happy that your prayers were answered, because you were praying a very fervent, hard prayer to a God you weren't even sure was listening.
That's right. And that's what I tell kids is that, you know, it's faith over religion. If you don't have any faith, forget it. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really have no idea what's out there. You're just having faith that somebody is listening, and some spirit in the universe is going to answer.
Right.
And so the faith that I had was that, you know, this is going to happen for me. And when it did, as I tell kids, when you place in that foster home, tell yourself, maybe this is where I'm supposed to be, and this is my starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look at a foster home as being a bad place, even though there are some terrible foster homes out there.
Sure, of course.
But look at foster care. Okay, I'm now where I'm supposed to be. Now let me see how far I can go from here.
Mm.
Not see how do I get out of here and go back to that other life, but let me see where I can go from here. So I looked at this. This is where I'm supposed to be. Now I have a chance. You know, I was in the third grade when I arrived in my foster parents' home. It was in March of 1955.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from March of 1955 till I graduated high school, I missed one day of school.
Wow. That must have been a terrible something to happen to you to miss that one day.
Yeah. They sent me home sick because they thought I had an appendix breaking. Blah, blah, blah. But I was like,
But you recovered fast, didn't you?
Yeah, I was not going to miss, because I didn't know. You know, it's like I'm afraid that if I miss, I'm going to go. You know, I'm on this path, and I'm afraid to get off of it.
You don't want to slip one step.
Yeah, that's what my whole point was. It's almost like a person who's a recovering alcoholic or drug addict know that one slip in their back.
That's right. That's right.
So I was like, I can't have one. If I don't go to school, God's going to punish me. He's going to say, okay, you didn't mean what you said you meant. So I was like, I'm going to graduate from high school because I promised that I was going to do this. And so I didn't want anything to break that.
Tell listeners how they can get a hold of your book and or learn more about you and your speaking. I'm sure you speak to groups too.
Yes, I do. And my book is Dreamer in the Fields. You can get it at Amazon.com.
Okay.
Or you can go online at www.dreamerinthefields.com, which is my website. And
okay.
You can also send me an email from my website, and we can talk about, you know, some of the things that I've talked about today or anything that you would like to talk about.
Okay.
Also, if people would like to invite me to be a speaker at schools or churches, I just spoke at a church for Black History Month,
mm-hmm.
they can either call me at or they can email me at hill4085@yahoo.com.
Okay, repeat that for me. Hill?
4085.
4085.
At yahoo.com.
At yahoo.com. Okay.
Or they can call me
God.
at 760.
760.
619.
619.
3783.
Okay, this is beautiful. I know that many listening are going to want to get your book. And those who are organizers, meeting planners, this is a wonderful way to give people encouragement, not just children and people that perhaps were in your identical situation, but anyone who needs, and I think that's all of us, any of us who need encouragement, motivation, because those of us who even haven't had hardships in our lives, not anything to compare with yours. Many times we start taking things for granted, we get ungrateful, and we do not take advantage of the opportunities
right.
that are around us. And that's a,
right.
that's a crime, that's a shame. Before our time runs out, would you please say a word to the children that are in the foster care system nationwide? What message would you want to say to those children in particular? I know that your message is good for all children, but those children
well,
in particular.
My message to foster kids is that they need to realize the position you are in and take
mm-hmm.
advantage of that position.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, you know, as I said, that not all foster homes are great, but I look at the one that you're in and see if this is where your opportunity can begin. Educate yourself as far and as high as you can do it so that you won't look up going back to where you are. Then you got to make decisions for yourself. You got to decide that, okay, I'm 13, I'm 14, and mama and daddy are not responsible for my life anymore. I'm
mm-hmm.
responsible for my life. As foster kids, we have to make those decisions. Our parents are not responsible for that. Our parents gave us up. Our
mm-hmm.
parents are doing certain things that we don't agree with. So
mm-hmm.
that's showing that they're more, like I felt that my parents loved alcohol more than they loved me. So
mm-hmm.
I felt that that's what you want to go. I've got to make decisions. So
mm-hmm.
take control of your own life. It's
mm-hmm.
yours. It's no one else's. It is your
mm-hmm.
life. And
mm-hmm.
and you have to remember that if this is your life, then you have got to let people know that you are in control of it. Other words,
mm.
if they want to offer you drugs, don't take them. If they want to offer you alcohol, don't take it, because
mm-hmm.
you are in control of your own life, and don't allow anyone to take control of your life. That's the reason I was with everyone. I didn't want anyone to be in control of me, because
mm-hmm.
I felt that they would try to make me do something I did not want to do, and
wow.
I'm in control of me now.
That's beautiful.
And so I've helped
to
do that.
I want to repeat what you just said quickly so that we really get this. So, and actually what you're saying pertains to all of us in life, but in the foster care system perhaps it's exaggerated and dramatized. But one, be realistic about your situation. So if you're in this situation, you're there for a reason. Right or wrong, you're there for a reason. And then look for the good that's in the situation you're in. What is there about it that's good, and where is there a spot where you can take advantage of it and improve yourself, and then educate yourself, learn as much as you can. And I imagine this is not just in school, but being observant like you were about other lifestyles, how other people are living, and then decide what you want for your life and take responsibility that you're the one that's going to make that happen, that no matter how many other people there are around you, you're the one that has to make that happen. Correct?
That is correct.
That
is exactly
so
what
wonderful.
You have to do.
Thank you so much for being on the show. as always, have great guests. We always end up running out of time because there's only so much time. So, listeners, please go over and visit the website at www.dreamerinthefields.com. Thank you, John, for coming on today. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. I will see you again next Monday, May 7th, when we will have another informative and exciting show. I'm Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. And as always, I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week and remember to color your life happy.
Color your life happy.
Color.
Every day you can choose. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
Color your life happy.